From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the spiritual doorway to the brain with Dr. Kevin Nelson. But here's what's happening. While we dodged a bullet, one of the strongest solar storms in years engulfed Earth early Thursday. But scientists say the planet may have lucked out. Hours after the storm arrived, officials said no reports of problems with the power grids, GPS satellites, or other technologies that are often disrupted by solar storms. But that still can change as the storm shakes the planet's magnetic field in ways that could disrupt technology. We are not out of the woods yet. This huge sunspot is facing directly at us. And according to Mitch Batras, EarthChangesMedia.com, it's capable of doing just about anything. It's still spitting off coronal mass ejections, Mitch, isn't it?
It sure is. And a correction, George, I will say I was very pleased with the news coverage today. Again, all major networks covered it really well. I mean, every single hour, except for one major error. Their timeline line is wrong. It's not over.
It's not over.
No, it's not. The March 7th event, in fact, I'm looking at one of the government sites right now. One of them is spaceweather.com. They just put up a notice. They call it an update. First, they say that the X-class flare has hit the Earth's magnetic field. And now they put an update that says, but wait, as of March 9th unfolds, conditions in the wake of a CME are becoming favorable for a stronger geomagnetic storm. So in short, it's not over. That particular one, the X-class flare, that X5.4, is just beginning to hit. And now comes the billowing plasma, the CME, which is just beginning to hit actually in the next few hours. Now, as of just 2 hours ago, actually less, a new M-class flare has occurred from the same sunspot, sunspot 1429. It's an M6.3 solar flare. That's going to be right on the shoulder, back-to-back, of this event that's happening now. Now, all those cautions I put out yesterday, I'm going to reel those back in or actually place them forward. The FAA is now set to place a warning on all high-flying aircraft. They have sustained a ceiling, what they call a ceiling, of 32,000 feet. So 747s, 777s, and then all the military aircraft. Anything that flies above 40,000 feet has now been ordered to drop to a maximum of 32,000 feet.
That's pretty dramatic all by itself, isn't it, Mitch?
Well, yes, it is. Here's another one. The United States Air Force and all its military assets are already on alert for potential damaged satellites, both communication and armed. So we have our Air Force in full alert. The United States Department of Energy, DOE, has placed all on full alert, assessing all power grid facilities and backup protocol. So I don't want to get in conspiracy stuff, and because I get excited as a researcher that, you know, I'm hitting on all cylinders, it may come across in a maybe too excited kind of way. But I think the government, probably in good faith, is wanting to tap it down a bit. I think they are aware of the potential danger, But my sense is that let's tap it down a bit. Let's not get, you know, all these movies have come out and some people, you know, some pretty heavy disaster stuff. I think we're trying to find a balance to let people know that in today's society that we're so dependent on energy and electrical currents and grids and satellites, that the potential is really severe.
Well, it really is, Mitch. Mitch, the other thing, too, was that this X5 that hit a day or so ago, there are many that this sunspot can create, and that's what we need to watch. So thank you so much. The Justice Department has warned Apple Computer and five other publishers that it plans to sue them, accusing them of collusion to raise the prices of electronic books. U.S. and European officials have been investigating whether ebook publishers and Apple fixed prices in the growing electronic book industry, blocking rivals and hurting you, the consumer. Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson says marijuana should be legalized and treated like alcohol because the government's war on drugs has failed. I agree with him. The outspoken Christian and host of the 700 Club on the Christian Broadcasting Network said that the war on drugs is costing us billions of dollars, and he said people should not be sent to prison for marijuana possession. Faced with mounting pressure from the world over its controversial nuclear program, Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency has reiterated that his country is ready to re-engage talks, but he stopped short of saying they would end its program. Jerry Corsi on with us. Jerry, here we go again. I mean, it seems like every other day there's a new Iranian story.
Well, I think, George, we're edging closer to war. I mean, the negotiations going on right now with the International Atomic Energy Agency are more dancing by Iran, which is not going to stop its nuclear program. I got the distinct impression, George, when I saw the meeting this past week with Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Obama in the White House, that Netanyahu was saying, okay, now we're going to go to war. It was kind of like the last meeting, you know,
And he was basically telling the president, that's the way it is.
That's the way it is. We're going to defend Israel. And unless there's an immediate diplomatic turnaround, war is really on the, it's imminent. And I think we're moving closer to war, which, George, I've tried to prevent since I wrote the book Atomic Iran in 2005. I think it's the worst possible solution, but I think we're on the edge of war. I think the covert war has already begun.
I think so, too.
Now we're about to enter in the shooting war.
The only thing we could hope for is some kind of Iranian citizen involvement to do something there. But I just don't think that's going to happen fast enough, Jerry.
Well, it'd be wonderful if President Obama and the White House would speak out and say we would support the Green Movement again, any reaching out to the people of Iran. The people of Iran do not want a war any more than the rest of the world wants. This is the regime that's in control of Iran. And, George, as you know, we've talked about it for years. The war is going to be disastrous and unpredictable. Unfortunately, it may not at this point be avoidable.
All right, Jerry, thank you so much. Jerry also writes for WorldNet Daily. Osama bin Laden accepted that he may be betrayed by someone close to him and viewed death as a release from years of declining health, according to a new account of his life in Pakistan. Now, this was researched by a retired Pakistani army officer who claims that Al-Qaeda forced bin Laden to retire from his position as the head of the group and to live out his days in isolation from the movement he founded. It paints a picture of the world's most wanted man living a secluded life surrounded by squabbling wives as he gradually succumbed to dementia and failing health. And it's even also alleged that one of the wives may have turned him in. Up next, we're going to be talking with Gary Patterson as we take a little walk on the dark side. Gary's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Gary Patterson's a published author with a passion for rock and roll. Gary works all over the place with many fascinating events that have helped shape musical history from Robert Johnson through current groups taking a name and place for themselves among rock and roll's standing legends. Always a pleasure to have you back on the show, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing great, George. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Lots have happened since you were last on with us. All these great singers, Whitney Houston, Davy Jones from the Monkees, Ronnie Montrose, they're all gone.
Yeah, it's amazing. You can even throw in Etta James, you know, from one of the greatest female singers of her time. But, yeah, it's just really strange. And, you know, I think the thing is with Whitney Houston, I mean, she has such a fabulous voice, but you just sort of had this feeling that something terrible was going to happen with her.
Yeah, you know? I think so, too. And you can predict that with a lot of people out in the Hollywood area. I mean, you look at them and you see their lifestyle and what they're doing, and it's just sadly reckless.
Well, you're right. And I know when you're talking about predicting, I did a show with E called Doom to Die 13 Curses, and we did the 27 thing again. And one of the things they had on the show, they said, well, who's going to be the next artist to die at 27? And they brought up, Britney Spears, but, you know, she had made a pretty good life change. And then they said, it has to be Amy Winehouse. And she did die at 27. So you're right about predicting. I think it's the horror of the lifestyle that can grab you and take you away way too much soon.
What's new with you these days, Gary?
Well, my goodness, I'm working on you're not going to believe this, George, but I'm working on a CD with Catbone Records. It's some original music, and I'm doing royalty tracking with John Hitchborn at our site on royaltytracking.com, so we find artists money that they may never have. And I finished two projects, and I've done all I can do. One's a documentary that I've got the writing done for, and hopefully it'll be funded soon, and working on a television series with the director from HBO. So I guess I've been rather busy.
Yeah, you have. Has iTunes saved the music industry?
You know, that's kind of interesting. When you go all the way back to when Napster started, and everybody was saying, well, you know, I only want one song. I just want to buy this one song. I don't want to buy the whole album. And when Napster came out, before Metallica sued, you had the idea that you either had to buy the album itself, the entire album, or you just couldn't buy the song. So when iTunes came out and Amazon.com, they also have a site, and you can buy each song you want for 99 cents up to maybe $1.29. You know, that's the way that it can save the music industry, because, George, I can tell you now that there's more money made from digital downloads than from any other form of media in the recording industry.
Oh, and they're what, 99 cents, aren't they?
Yeah, 99 cents. I mean,
a cut.
Anyone can afford a dollar for a favorite song. You know, I don't think that's a problem. And I know there are a lot of people who say, yeah, well, CDs are still overpriced, but now you have the option to go in and pick up the songs. I know that when the Beatles came out with their catalog on iTunes, of course, it was appropriately Apple, since that was the label they started for themselves. But I don't think you can get actual Beatle recordings on Amazon. So I think it's going to be a way of the future in which more money is going to come in, and more money that comes in, hopefully the artist will recover. Because I don't know if anyone knows this, but when an artist puts out product, you normally have a manufacturer royalty, which goes from 2% to maybe 15%, depending on the band. We have a client who has 1%. And, George, you wouldn't believe the songs. Some of the most famous songs you could ever imagine, these artists have never been paid for them. So what they're trying to do is do a licensing royalty, which would be 50-50, 50% to the label, 50% to the artist. And the other good news is that if you have XM and Sirius Radio, when terrestrial radio plays a song, the songwriter and the publisher split all the money. If you're in the band, you don't get a penny. But if it's on Sirius XM, the artist, the whole band, splits in the money. So I think that's a positive way it looks, too.
You know what's exciting, though, Gary? The new media platforms. I mean, and I can see it directly with this program. I mean, and I love it. You know, commercial terrestrial radio, which is so strong. Internet usage, you know, as you were talking about the iTunes and things like that. Just there's so many different varieties for people, but they're all getting the information. That's the important thing. And they're supporting each sector of these media platforms. I think technology is exciting.
I think technology is exciting, and we have streaming also now.
Yep.
So, you know, you can have, well, Pandora, for instance. You can set up channels and you can listen to your music. You can't record it, but you can listen to it. And, you know, anything that helps a creative person recoup their money for their product and then be out there for everyone to open, I think that's great. And, George, what do you think about the new e-books that are coming out?
Well, I think they're all great. You know, we've got a lot of our affiliates that use iHeart, for example, too, for what they're doing. I think everything that's coming out with technology is exciting. You know, years ago when I started in radio and then television, we only had, you know, the three major networks. It was unheard of, Gary, to think of anything beyond ABC, NBC, and CBS for television. And then all of a sudden, you know, Ted Turner popped up and another thing popped up. And then cable started to grow and people laughed at it in the early 70s. They didn't think that it would go anywhere. I mean, and now look at where we are with satellite transmissions and everything else. And now what they're going to be able to do, and you're doing it in some form and fashion, but eventually all TVs will be like huge television, internet screens. So you can sit back and you can play with your television like it's a huge computer. You can watch movies. You can do anything you want. Here's the downside of all this. You know, today we've been reporting on these X flares that have been popped from the sun that, you know, keep bombarding us. One day, Gary, we're going to get one that shuts us down. This is a wake-up call. We were lucky today, but it's not over. We're not out of the woods. This huge sunspot is facing directly at us. It's like looking down the barrel of a shotgun. It could happen. But when technology gets hit by something like this, everything's cooked for a while. And then what do people do when they're so used to it and they can't get it anymore? What do they do?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, I mean, I often thought, what did I do in the 60s, you know, when I didn't have all this? But at the time, everything was great.
Yeah, but you weren't used to it. They're used to it now. You know, you take your cell phone away from someone today.
Exactly.
They go crazy.
Yeah. I heard that there's more people addicted to Facebook than to cigarettes or alcohol. You know?
They wake up in the morning, they go to Facebook. It's in the
day.
It's on their smartphones. It's everywhere. Now,
and
my point is we got by without this because we didn't know. You know, it wasn't around for us. So we made do with what we had. But I'm telling you, once you give something away, okay, it's very difficult to take it back. And that's with technology. That's with Facebook and, you know, sending text messages. If somebody wasn't able to send a text message for one day, I think they'd go bonkers.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I mean, I do text, but, you know, it's so much easier for me just to call somebody instead of pushing my thumbs on the little...
I might get a text from 20 different people in a day. I cannot physically talk to 20 people in a day. I'd get nothing done. I've got too much going on. I've got too many meetings, too much post-production, too many things. I don't have time to sit there and talk to people. And I have talked to a lot of people, younger people, who hate talking on the phone.
Oh, exactly.
You know, I saw a couple once. They were looking at their cell phone, and somebody called them. And the guy's name showed up. And they looked at the name and they said, oh, my God, we don't want to talk to him. But had he texted them, they would have sent him back a quick reply.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to pick up the phone that much anymore, not the younger generation.
Well, that's true. I mean, when you're around a bunch of high school kids, all they do is constantly text. And hopefully they're not texting in the car behind you when you're driving down the road, too. So those are some things. But you're right. Technology really breeds this. And, you know, we're used to it. We're much more comfortable. As you're saying, in the 60s, I mean, how did people survive back then without technology? But we weren't used to it. When you're used to it, you just can't take it away. I agree 100%.
What is it about music, Gary, that just change your mood almost instantly? The right song at the right time is magic.
It is. It really is. And when you hear it, it's like your whole life is a map of songs. And when you hear a song, it can take you back to a time when you were with someone else or you were doing something that was so pleasant. And that song is like a great time machine that just takes you back and you redo those feelings. You know, you just come back with it. And when you hear a song that for the first time, it just really has a magical impact. It can make you sad. It can make you laugh. It's something that you want to hear over and over again. And, you know, that's part of the industry. I think it's always been that way. I mean, when Elvis Presley came out to a lot of the artists today, and when we're talking about the great loss of Whitney Houston and Davy Jones, who I just couldn't believe was 66 years old, you know.
And you always think of him as 24.
Yeah, he's a perpetual 24 in prefab 4, you know.
Yep.
And when the Monkees came over, I mean, he was the star. Everybody else backed up Davy Jones because, you know, he was had the great voice and he had the British accent, which helped.
Yeah. And wasn't Mickey Dolenz, wasn't he Circus Boy in the TV show?
Circus Boy, yes, he was, you know.
I remember
and,
that.
He did very well as a singer, too, you know, when this happened. But, you know, one of the great urban legends about the Monkees was that Charles Manson had actually tried out for one of the roles. But that's not
you know
true.
What? He probably did. I'm going to tell you a funny Charlie Manson story when we come back in a moment, Gary. It's an incredible story. As a matter of fact, a few months ago, we played one of his first audition tapes. I'll be back in a moment. Well, next hour, we'll talk about the spiritual doorway in the brain through a neurologist's mind, Dr. Kevin Nelson. A great subject. Looking forward to that. When we come back in a moment, more with our Gary Patterson as we talk about music in the industry as well. Gary, you were talking about Charlie Manson, and a friend of mine, Russ Regan, who discovered Neil Diamond, Elton John, had the Beach Boys change their name to the Beach Boys.
Okay.
He was telling me a few months ago that Charlie Manson walked into his office and wanted to cut an audition tape, let him listen to what he had, and he turned him down, and he walked out, and he said, God, I hope I'm not responsible for him going the way he did.
He should have talked to Terry Melcher because, you know, Melcher, the Beach Boys, well, Dennis Wilson had brought Melcher to meet Manson, and Melcher encouraged him. And then the Beach Boys did the song Never Learn Not to Love, which was the takeoff of Manson Ceased to Exist. And a lot of people say that's why Sharon Tate was murdered, because that was the exact house that Terry Melcher was living in a week or so before, and that they were after him. So
yeah, they went to the wrong people there. Yeah, wrong people there. Let's take some calls here with you, Gary. Let's go to Costa Mesa, California. Joy is with us. Hey, Joy, welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It tickled me so to listen to you guys talk about what would we do without all of our electronics.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, we'd do box games, and like Saturday night, everybody that played musical instruments would get together and we'd do a sing-along.
Box game? What's a box game?
You know, Monopoly, Scrabble, stuff like that.
One of those things.
Yeah, one of those great things. They were a lot of fun. We would also, we'd have talent night where everybody would have to get up and either recite a poem they made or sing a song they wrote or do a little skit they wrote. That was a lot of fun. We did a lot of reading. And believe it or not, and this really disturbs me when I watch kids nowadays, they will text each other even though they're sitting at the same table. These kids are losing all their social skills. They don't even know how to carry on a decent social conversation anymore.
Joy, let me tell you something.
It's scary.
They cannot. If you go to a fast food restaurant and their computer is down,
oh, they're dead.
They do not know how to give you change.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? If the bill's like $12.32 and you give them a 20, they stand there looking at you. They can't do it.
That's right. And then you have to tell them how to count the money back because they don't even know how to properly count change back.
It is amazing what the computer industry has done to people.
Hey, when we were going to college, we went to college with a slide rule.
I remember that. I used to have that when I used to do baseball averages of all my favorite players.
Oh, I still have my log duplex vector slide rule to this day.
All right. Thanks for the call. Gary, two of my board games, my favorites in the old days, the Clue game. Do you remember that?
I remember Clue. I loved it.
And Stratego.
I love Stratego.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. Love to hide that flag and put the bombs in the right place.
Oh, it was the best. I miss those days sometimes.
Well,
Nothing wrong with that.
Simpler, but I think your question to me was even better, because once you have the technology, you just can't be weaned off of it. You know, when we were growing up and you had board games and you had that, there was nothing else to do. I mean, that was the highest output of technology we had to entertain ourselves.
Well, these games are still being sold, so somebody must be buying them, right?
Yes. Yes, and I hope so, because, I mean, the games we mentioned are fabulous. I used to love Monopoly. If it was a rainy day, or, you know, you could just sit there for hours and just really learn about capitalism.
The one I didn't like was Chutes and Ladders.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't like it. It was, to me, it wasn't a guy game.
No, it wouldn't be.
Let's go to Sean, driving in Oklahoma, first-time caller. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment about, you know, the technology and how it's really overtaken our lives.
Sure.
I mean, it's just insane to think about just how much you depend on it. And if we were to have a solar flare, and these things take out all of the utilities and everything. Everything's down. It's something my wife and I have prepared for, trying to teach our kids, you know, that, you know, video games are not, you know, what we're going to do. You may not always have that.
Oh, I know. It would be insane. It really would. You know what they should do, Gary? Just as an experiment, controlled experiment, shut off the power to one small city for a week and just see how people, this would be a study, so that people can't flee, they can't get away, they have to live in this environment, and see what happens. I bet by the end of that week, they'd be eating themselves alive.
Well, I would agree with that because, I mean, you can imagine with the communications down, with everything else, I mean, it would be a lot of fear and a lot of a terrible amount of anxiety. So it would be a terrible place to live. Make sure it's not my city.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to Gainesville, Florida. Vincent's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Vincent, thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you so much. You were just talking about trying to hook up artists with royalty money. So I wanted to let you know there's a local business in town that started up. They started a website. I can tell you it if you want. But they pretty much, it streams music for you. Like, you can search a song and it plays it right over the internet. And
yeah.
Then they set aside some of the advertisement money into an account for that artist. And then either a year or whenever the artist finds out that their song has been played at this website, then they just, like...
They send you a check, huh?
So I don't know. Maybe that's something you could look into and work together and help hook up the artist. Because I'm always, you know, wanting them to get paid, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, being from Gainesville, Florida, there are a lot of great musicians from Gainesville, you know, and it seems like a good location as far as having to call from. But, you know, a lot of artists, they, if you look at a royalty statement, they're pages long, and artists really don't know what to look for. So especially with the digital rights that are coming out now, if you had a contract signed before 2003, you may be stuck on a 4% royalty rate, a manufacturer royalty. And the funny thing is that a CD, when it comes out, you had the cost of making a CD, you had liner notes, but and you also had damaged products. Well, if it's a digital download, there's no damaged product. There's no cost for liner notes. So that's why every artist ought to talk to someone about going through their contracts and helping them receive their maximum money. I mean, you may get paid, but there may be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 that's not in your royalty statement that you could find.
You know, it's funny, too, Gary, about music. You know, I play bumper music from the various decades, right?
Mm-hmm,
you know,
sure.
from current all the way back. And hearing the difference in just 10 years of each decade, absolutely staggering the way music has changed, and I guess technology has helped change that. But could you imagine the hit songs of today played back in the 50s and 60s? And vice versa, they just wouldn't work anymore, would they?
Well, I mean, it'd be culture shock in the 1950s because, you know, this was all brand new. When you talk about early rock and roll and rockabilly and to go to what we have now, and have it brought back in 1956 when Elvis was out. I mean, it would be, I don't know if it would actually even go over, you know. And when you listen to your parents' music, and, you know, you have an appreciation for Sinatra and some of the others and the big band stuff, but how big would that go over today? And you talk about technology. When I think of the Beatles, I think of the Rubber Soul album, and I think about how that turned into Revolver, and I think about how Revolver turned into Sgt. Pepper's, and it was growing so fast, and the music changed so incredibly that it even destroyed the Beatles because they couldn't take it any further. But sadly enough, as far as recording technology and as far as the sound go, I don't think that anyone has ever pushed the envelope any further as far as the recording industry than the Beatles did on those three albums.
I watched the DVD Beyond the Sea with Kevin Spacey playing Bobby Darin. Great movie.
Oh, wow.
Spacey did a great job. And Kevin, if you're listening, I want you on the show. But would Bobby Darin work today in this environment? I don't think so. I don't think he'd be nearly as successful as he was then.
Well, sometimes you just come around at the perfect time. And when I think of Bobby Darin, everybody thinks of Mac the Knife, but, you know, I think of Dream Lover.
Or I think of Beyond the Sea.
Yeah, and Beyond the Sea. I mean, you have a changing sound that came across.
But, I mean, could you imagine Bobby Darin or Elvis on American Idol today? Would they win?
You know, I was just bringing this up the other day. I said if Janis Joplin, Bob Dylan, and Roy Orbison were on American Idol, I guarantee you they would not get through the first round because it's more the packaging than it is the artist.
Yeah, exactly. Yet they're geniuses of music.
Oh, yeah. Incredible musicians and music.
Oh, my gosh. They wouldn't make it, would they?
No, I'm afraid they wouldn't. I think Bobby would be there with them. Elvis may.
And this new one, The Voice? The chairs, the judges' chairs would never turn around, would they?
They would look puzzlingly at each other.
They'd never see Orbison with those glasses on.
Yeah.
Had he still been around.
Yeah, but what a great voice.
Or Johnny Cash. Would Johnny Cash make it today?
Well, you know, Johnny Cash transcended from early rock at Sun Records into country music, and he had the voice. I mean, if he had the song, I think that may have done it. If he did Ring of Fire or, you know, one of his major hits, I guarantee a chair would turn around for him.
You really think so?
I think he would.
I see. If they don't use new technology, I don't think they would make it nowadays.
Well, the new technology actually would, if you could go back to those days at Sun and you could record with the technology we have today, they would have even been better.
What do the demographics tell us, Gary, about who buys these iTunes and these clips?
Well, I tell you, it used to be that rock and roll was determined by 12-year-old girls. And whatever 12-year-old girls bought, that was it. And you can follow that pattern up to the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and the others, mm-hmm. because that was a very volatile group of teenagers who had money, and it was disposable income, so they could afford to go and buy it. You know, you can look at it. I mean, I've always been surprised. Last time I was in it, well, a couple of years ago when I was in L.A., and I was reading a thing in Rolling Stone where it said that teenagers had saved classic rock because you had kids who were like 16 years old who were buying Jimi Hendrix and Pink Floyd albums and Led Zeppelin albums, and everyone was sort of stunned to see that the music had worked its way to that group. And so, you know, I'd say being young, being 12, I don't know how much the idea of rebellion plays into it, like with Elvis and everyone else. But, you know, everybody wants to do something apart from their mom and dad. They want to have their own music. But I would say it's nice to be young and nice to be able to download.
Let's go to Juneau, Alaska. Jeff's with us west of the Rockies. Hi, Jeff.
George, how are you? Hey, I must apologize. I didn't get on in time to learn the guest's first name.
That's okay. It's Gary Patterson.
Gary, good to hear you guys are smart. This show is like, right? And I wanted to say, and I told your call screener, here's the thing about technology before I get into it. You know, the good thing about the sunspot thing that happened on the solar storm, it cleared the airline so that I could get through to coast to coast. I think that's just, you know, that's exactly what my magic did. Anyway, you guys were mentioning board games and all of that. I am the inventor of a board game.
Oh, are you?
And I actually wrote a letter to John B. Wells about it last summer, and he actually got back to me. But I'm also a musician. And I want to get back to the conversation, but I wanted to say the thing we were just talking about, you know, would Elvis make it if he got on, you know, America's Idol or whatever? You know, probably not. And the thing that I always tell people, I'm a guitar player. I've been a guitar player for 40 years, and I always tell people the thing about these people that came back in the 60s and the 50s, you'll probably agree with me that the Beach Boys in 1960, when they came out with Endless Summer, that was the birth of modern recording technology onto an album. Is that correct? Would you agree with that?
Well, I agree that there's a lot of Phil Spector. You know, when you take a look at the Beach Boys, obviously, and you take a look at Pet Sounds, and you take a look at how those albums influenced with the technique and how it was done, and how the Beatles had taken Pet Sounds and they developed their own Sgt. Pepper. So, yeah, you had great technology and you had a great ear like Spector, who influenced so many producers after him.
Well, here's the thing I wanted to say. I started playing the guitar when I was 11 years old in 1971. And what I can remember is I listened to all of these people that were just starting out putting albums on the radio that were produced. Before that, these guys all had to listen to stuff in the 50s that you had to go into a room with your band and it all had to be live. You only got one take. They didn't know what multi-track recording was.
Right.
And they had been listening to the scratchy stuff from the 40s and the 30s that had very low quality audio and they were playing through one microphone and everything. But
right.
They had to learn their music through that. But you know what I noticed? Through the, I listened to multi-track produced recordings, and my musicianship goes first and best. So I always tell people, these guys weren't great musicians. They were just first.
They were first, yeah. Well, that's interesting that you say that. Chuck Berry, for example, Gary.
Right.
Who influenced him? I mean, and did he influence Elvis?
Well, I'd say that when you take a look at Chuck, you know, obviously he had a blues background. He was with Chess Records.
And he's still going. He's in St. Louis.
I hope he goes for many, many more years, you know. I mean, Chuck Berry is the greatest lyricist of all time. He could stand in front of a microphone and write 20 verses of a song. And, you know, and each verse would be different. But, you know, the influences, you can take a look at Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters, you don't hear very much blues in there. But what you do with rock and roll is you take where, you pick it up where you find it, and you play it. And then you add something very unique to it of your own. And then you lay it back down and wait for somebody else to pick it up and take it further.
I think, and you tell me if I'm right, a person who does not have music in their life, whether it's enjoying listening to it or playing it, you don't have to be a musician, but a person without music in their life has an empty hole in their life. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I mean, I grew up listening to every style of music, and I loved a number of the bands that came out, and I was very fortunate, like you, George, to live in a golden era of music. And I can't imagine what my life would be like. I mean, I always tell people music changed my life. It gave me the passion. It made me want to write. It made me, you know, when I talk about some of these stories that we talk about on Coast to Coast, I mean, it all came from my love of music. And I think that anyone who doesn't have it, you know, it's very sad.
My almost 18-year-old granddaughter thinks I'm one of the hippest granddads you can have.
See, how
you
about
know?
That?
Because, you know, I like music from all walks of life. I really do. It's just, you know, I love talented people, Gary.
No, well, I do too, and I love to listen to something. I like to listen to something that's new, and I like to listen to something that moves me, you know, something that's an emotional outlet. I love that.
Let's go to Stephanie in Houston, Texas. Hey, Steph, welcome to the show.
Hi.
You there? Go ahead.
I was calling for, let me turn off the speaker. I hope I can. Anyway, I was calling for several reasons. First of all, you were talking about texting. Oh, it drives me insane. But I saw this Virgin Wireless commercial. And it was when, I don't know the man's name that owns Virgin, but it was showing him as a little boy.
Richard Branson.
Okay. It showed him as a little boy, and he said, someday we're all going to be talking with our thumbs.
How right he was. So how about the Dick Tracy cartoons of years gone back, Gary? Those things were years ahead of themselves.
Well, they were, but, you know, a lot of comic strips at the time when people would actually buy the Sunday paper and you'd see them in color, I remember that. I always looked forward to that. With Dick Tracy was one of my favorites. But, you know, the storylines, the development, the artwork itself, I mean, it's all classic today. I'd say if you had some original sketches from Dick Tracy, they would be worth a fortune today.
I had comic books that I think my mother has thrown out, baseball cards.
Yes, nobody ever thought they'd be worth anything.
And they're all gone. And then they were pristine Superman comics, everything gone.
I used to have them myself. I had closets. I would just pack them in boxes. And one day they were no longer there. So I guess they figured that, well, he's grown up enough. He doesn't need his toys.
A little bit of nostalgia tonight with Gary Patterson. Gary's website, rgarypatterson.com, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, the spiritual doorway in the brain. We're going to talk with a neurologist about his search for the God experience.